apologize, is from Children's Mercy Hospital in Kansas City, and this is a collaboration between her group and other groups, so she'll explain better than I can. I don't have to read the disclaimer, so we'll start straight off. Thanks.
Good afternoon. Thank you for coming. My only disclaimer is that I'm part Irish, and so I have a terrible problem with digressing. I'll try to keep that to a minimum. What you see here today, many of the collaborators on this project, and if you want to meet them, most of them are in the cheerleading section in the back. So the project is about what we call McSkip, the Monroe County School Kids Influenza Prevention Program. I may say McSkip, and that's what that stands for. It was designed to evaluate the feasibility, acceptability, and effectiveness of a sort of real-world school-located influenza vaccination program in elementary schools. I need to say for a moment that when people talk about school-located vaccination, they mean a whole host of different things. I am trying to mean just one specific thing: vaccination against influenza in elementary schools during the school day. We actually had one school district that agreed to participate in the project, and then down the road decided that they only wanted vaccination after the school day, and so you won't be seeing their data today. Our model then is vaccination during the school day. Parents were not present during vaccination. If they wanted to be, they were welcome to drive into school, but we found that very, very few people actually followed through with that. Families were offered both intranasal spray or injectable vaccine, as was available. Later, this data, it is about the H1N1 year, and so, as you recall, later in the flu vaccination season, the intranasal spray was available, the injectable was not. Each school was offered 2 vaccine days, and these were in 2009. Several McSkip presentations are going on, so you're only going to see one piece of the, you know, how do you feel an elephant a little at a time. I guess that's not really a joke. But there's other pieces of the elephant that you can feel by going to the poster number 76 is about the consent process. And tomorrow at 9 o'clock, Dr. Yu from University of Rochester will be talking about the economic analysis. All right. The key groups involved. The vaccinator in this particular program was not the school nurse. We had an outside vendor who had agreed to take on the both the financial risk and if there's any liability associated with vaccinating itself, that it would be that they would bear that risk as well. They're an experienced vaccinator, and that's one of the things we heard in focus groups from parents, was that they were very reassured it was the School of Nursing at University of Rochester. So parents were reassured that it was a very experienced mass vaccinator. The payers, New York State Department of Health, and New York State Medicaid gave a special permission to the vendor to provide VFC vaccine and bill an administration fee. Most of the local insurers accepted billing from this vendor as well. This is very important because one of the points of this, again, was to look at the sustainability of the business model. The schools, there were 7 school districts that agreed to participate. Now, they were randomly assigned to 2 different intervention arms. Either they were a high-intensity notification group or a low-intensity notification group. I'll go into the details of what I specifically mean by that on the next slide. But one of the things we heard from the school districts was they didn't want to be part control, part high notification, and part low notification. They were okay with being part control and part one notification system or the other, but they didn't want that all mixed together. They felt that was too confusing, too overwhelming. And if they felt it was too overwhelming, we felt that it was too likely to get messed up. So each school district, there were some control schools, and there was either high notification or low notification intervention schools. The project team consisted of several people that were hired specifically for this project, primarily around the notification of parents, designing the notification for the parents, putting that in place, and then gathering and organizing the consents. And finally, the evaluation team are scientists from the University of Rochester Medical School. Okay, so the communication piece. I remember I said that it was either low intensity notification or high intensity notification. So in June, both groups received an introductory letter of what we're calling a backpack flyer. The backpack flyer told about the McSkip program and that it was coming. And then there was information, just general information about influenza. Then in August, families were mailed in the low notification group a simple reminder postcard. In high notification groups, they received a reminder letter signed by the Department of Health head, as well as an age-appropriate activity book focused on influenza prevention. Then in September, children were sent home with information in their backpacks, including a cover sheet, again signed by the Department of Health leader, blank consent form, and I'll talk a little bit about that, VIS for influenza, both intranasal spray and injectable, flu fact sheet, and the clinic dates for their school. So you'll notice that in that year, the consent form was only in English. And that was because the consent form was designed not by the intervention team, but by the vendor. They were not willing at that stage of the game to have a lot of different consent forms go out. Their consent form was primarily designed for adults, and so there was some confusion as parents tried to fill it out. And it was in English only. In October, then, the low notification group got nothing. The high notification intensity group got another round of the whole backpack kit. In September and October and November, the high notification groups got autodialer notices. We found that all the schools had emergency phone number notification, like an autodialer system. And so we used that system to remind parents about the clinic, or the vaccine days, as I should say. The analysis. The outcome that we were looking at primarily was having at least one seasonal influenza vaccination, and it had to be recorded within the New York State Immunization Information System. The limitation, of course, on that is that we knew that the vendor was going to be quite diligent about getting all of their immunizations from our vaccine days into the New York State system, but we worried that there might be more of a problem for primary care offices to get their information into the system, so that there might be a differential giving the intervention schools a leg up, if you will. But in New York State, there is a law that makes it so that it's mandatory for all providers of childhood vaccines to put them in the registry. So we felt that that limitation would be limited, a limited limitation. And we also know from the New York State Immunization Information System that the participation is very high among primary care providers. The statistical tests I will just mention to you take into account that schools are not independent. So here you see a little bit about the schools. They are both suburban schools and urban schools. And you see that there were 4 to 6 schools per grouping. that the number of children per group was in the range of 1,500 to 3,000. As expected, most of the children in the suburban schools were white. Most of the children in the urban schools were black. And the free lunch percentage in suburban schools was low, and the free lunch in urban schools was high, eligibility for free lunch. All right. Were influenza immunization rates balanced between high intervention, low intervention, and control schools before we started the project? That's the, if things weren't balanced beforehand, then the test would be of no value. So we looked at the 2008-2009 vaccination season before McSkip had hit the ground. And we found that among urban schools, they were the immunization rates between those three intervention, the two intervention and the controls, was even. Among suburban schools, the only difference was that the schools that were in the high notification group were a little lower, 3% lower, than the low notification. So if anything, this gave the low notification group a leg up, if you will. So here are our results. Kind of smeared. I don't think there's a way to fix that at this point. But it's very hard to see, even from here. I think that let's just walk across the line. So this is the results in terms of having at least one seasonal influenza vaccine recorded in the registry. For suburban schools, it ended up, the suburban schools had about 48%, as opposed to low intervention was 46%, and controls was 36%. So you see that the high and low interventions were about equal, whereas the control was about 10% less. For the urban schools, which is very hard to see, the numbers are, for high intervention, it's 38. For low intervention, it's 33. And for controls, it's 26. So one of the things that stands out is that suburban schools seem much higher than urban schools before and after our intervention, which is, in a way, I mean, not surprising, but it was unfortunate. It was unfortunate to see that we hadn't overcome, with our intervention, we hadn't overcome that difference. Both intervention groups were greater than controls, so in-school vaccination did work. In urban school setting, the high notification was better than low notification, but we didn't see that in suburban schools as much. And as I mentioned, suburban schools did better than urban schools. I'll skip that. So our study limitations, New York State data system doesn't reflect all flu vaccines, but we've talked about how most offices are compliant with the law. The generalizability, this was done in one community with one flu season, and that flu season was unfortunately the H1N1 year, and that changed everything. We have repeated this project this past flu season, and we still need to get the data on that. But generalizability, of course, is always a question. Randomized by school, and there were a small number of schools involved. It wasn't like we were randomizing hundreds of schools to the different things. And there was no blinding possible, because, of course, the school would know whether it was an intervention school or not. The high and low intensity communication was different in more than one way. So we found that high intensity really did work in urban settings, but was it the autodialer aspect of it that worked, or the repeated notification in the backpacks? Because it was different in more than one way, we don't know which one of them was the one that worked. So in conclusion, school-located vaccination increased influenza vaccination rates significantly, and in urban schools, high-intensity notification of parents was more effective than less intensive notification. School-located vaccination may have lessened the burden of vaccination on primary care offices. For major impact, though, on community rates, more schools would have to be involved. And I'll, in other groups, they've asked me, why didn't you use television and radio to let people know about it? It was because it was that there were some control schools in each district, and so we couldn't use broad mass media. Efforts to enhance completion of consents and to decrease absences during the flu vaccine days are needed, especially in urban schools. We found that a lot of parents, even those that did fill out to the best of their ability the consent form and sent it in, often there was key information missing, like their signature. And so finding ways to improve the consent process would help the program a lot. I want to thank again people who weren't mentioned as co-investigators and to thank you for your attention.
Wonderful timing. So we have time for one or two questions. And I'll take the moderator's prerogative, I guess, and ask the first one, if that's okay. I had a bunch of questions, but among them were...
That's not good.
Yeah, no, a bunch of good questions, actually. You did this campaign right before the H1 monovalent vaccine came out, and were these schools also used to do school-located vaccination for H1? I was going to ask you if that helped prepare the schools.
No, we had not planned for H1N1 as no one had. And so that actually may have hurt us because some families that might have utilized the school program thought, well, I have to go to my doctor's office anyway for the H1N1, and so there may have been more participation, but ultimately it's hard to sort out because maybe more families were interested in influenza that year than any year before or since.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, good.
So it'll be interesting also to see this year when we have the New York State data.
Absolutely.
It'll be interesting to compare the two.
Yeah, indeed. Other questions? And we'll come back to questions again at the end, of course.
I know you said you had permission to bill Medicaid and those things. What about children that didn't have those services? Were they charged or?
Children who didn't have any form of insurance would be eligible for VFC vaccine. In a handful of cases, the vendor tried to... there were some insurers that had a mandatory fee, and so they tried to collect fees. Again, in the economic analysis, you'll see that collecting fees from elementary school children is not a good business model.
Did you do any study at whether you decreased absenteeism or anything with your project? Or
We don't have very good information on absenteeism during the season, unfortunately. And, I mean, ultimately, it would be wonderful to see if we influenced absenteeism and ultimately to have true surveillance. That would be a beautiful project.
Mm-hmm. Last question.
First time you've done school-based clinics, or is this where you've done school-based clinics before and you're measuring intervention?
No, this was a first time, and hopefully the only time. No, I'm only kidding.
That's not the take-home message for this.
I'm only joking. That was certainly one of the limitations, was that this was new to parents, new to school administrators, new to the health department, new implementation team. we didn't have a long history of doing this.
May I ask a quick follow-up then? What were the lessons learned from that first year that you applied to the second year before you?
I'll tell you, one of the main things was that we worked with the vendor about the consent form. In the focus groups afterwards, we asked parents about the project, and what we heard so much about was that the consent form was hard to deal with. So we worked with the vendor to improve their product. Yeah, I mean, part of their product is their consent form. And so we worked with them to make that easier to read for parents, and we had it transcribed into Spanish. Again, one of the things that the teachers told us was Spanish is just the tip of the iceberg. There's so many other languages. And so, I mean, again, it would be wonderful to have it translated to a bunch of different languages. And so if we could have, you know, if we could do this over and over, we might get there.
Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Sharon.